This is the Backlog Battle Podcast, episode 203.
The end of the year, game of the year, 2017.
And welcome to another episode of the Backlog Battle Podcast. This is Alex.
And this is Daniel.
Hey, dude, what's going on?
Well, not much. I actually came from a concert yesterday, so
ooh.
I'm pretty fucking, you know, still pretty high off that concert. Really good.
It's pretty cool. It's pretty cool. I'm pretty excited because today, finally, is our end of the year, game of the year 2017 episode. You've heard about that kind of stuff, right?
Of course.
Okay. He just left it at, of course. I was like, I thought you were going to elaborate on it and hype it up for people.
Hey, people know what a fucking game of the end of the game, you know, year shit is. Come on.
Okay, I will forgive you for that. It's kind of a tongue twister. It's it's the annual end of the year game of the year awards here at the Backlog Battle Podcast. We've been doing this for the past, like 4 years now, I think. Which is kind of nuts to think about, you know.
Wow, that is a while.
It is a while, and you know we've awarded some really cool games, some awards and stuff. And the criteria has changed over the past several years, and you know it. The criteria always changes every year, but this year, I'm kind of glad to say that we have a criteria that actually fits the both of us. You want to talk about that a little bit?
Sure, we're going to be talking about our top three games of the year, and I think we're going to reveal what our third is between the two of us, and then we'll move on to second, first, maybe even a little honorable mentions afterwards, just to plug some, you know, extra games in.
Yeah, absolutely. And unlike previous years, the criteria that Daniel and I have kind of agreed upon is basically like any game that was released in 2017. Am I right?
Yes.
Okay. Because in previous years, I don't know if you know this, but we've been kind of lax when it comes to the game of the year. So like, for example, like if there was a game that came out before the year and then you beat it that year, that counts as game of the year. So it's kind of like there's some weird rules that we've had before. So there's none of that shenanigans here. This is all the games that we're going to be featuring in our top three for each of us have all been released in 2017, right?
The most pure of Game of the Year lists.
Yes, the most pure Backlog Battle Game of the Year list ever made. So I know that we call ourselves Backlog Battle, and I'm pretty sure at some point we will revisit that sort of situation. But today is for 2017. Like, that sounds really weird. Can you save me from this? I'm digging a hole again. It seems to be a common thread these days ever since we started like co-hosting each other. Jesus Christ. Ugh. I don't know.
Hey man, you're the one with the shovel and the dirt on him. I'm not getting near that.
Yeah. Ugh. Okay. So there's been an amazing glut of games in 2017, and if you guys want to participate in this Game of the Year list, all you need to do is basically email us, podcast@mybacklogbattle.tv, or message us on Facebook and Twitter. Just look for the @mybacklogbattle username, and you'll find us. And, of course, on YouTube, just post it on the comments below, so let us know what your top three is.
Yeah, so, talk to us. We don't bite.
Yeah, we don't. We don't.
I mean, I don't know. I don't know about you.
I don't. I'm not a biter.
Unless what are you telling me something.
Maybe not. I'm not that kinky. Anyways. So, let's just start this list, shall we? So, I think I'll go first because, you know, like, I want people to know a lot about you. So, I'll make you, you know, do the last announcements of what your game is, shall we? Like, so do you want to ask me the question? Like, hey, Alex, what's your top three game of the year?
Oh, wow. I don't think I could top that, though.
Shit. That was terrible. Should I just answer?
Wanna I want to clarify, though. Okay. I don't know what his choices are, and he doesn't know mine.
Yes.
So it's going to be completely blind. We're going to be hearing these for the first time. So yeah. You get to hear our genuine what the fucks.
Yeah, totally. And again, this is 2017 only. Only games that have come out in 2017. I have to stress that because, again, end of the year, game of the year episodes are normally very free when it comes to that. But this time around, it's only 2017. So
No shenanigans.
So my top three is Horizon Zero Dawn.
Oh, so that's your number three, huh?
That is my number three. And so, interestingly enough, Anthony thought that Horizon Zero Dawn was going to be my number one game. You know, and he's mentioned this many times before, and he's like, oh, Horizon Zero Dawn is going to be your number one game. And I'm like, how sure are you? Right. And the reason why it's number three is because I feel like for being a fan of The Witcher 3 and playing a game like this, it's weird because this is a very different game than Witcher 3, first of all, not only because of the storyline and the gameplay and stuff, but also like it's tough for me to describe because it's not as big as The Witcher 3 and it doesn't have storylines as rich as The Witcher 3 side quests, right? But in terms of like just freedom of gameplay, like there's certainly something to be said about being able to hunt like robotic monsters and being able to salvage their parts to make, you know, different weapons and different ammo pieces and stuff that's really just super satisfying.
I just say that just conceptually, the idea that you're going around fighting robot dinos, pretty cool. Pretty cool.
Yeah, I thought so. And again, like this is really interesting to think about too, because I was probably one of the biggest and staunchest supporters of this game before it came out in February. A lot of people were actually really bullish on this game. A lot of people said that this was going to be a piece of shit. I don't know where this came from, but then, you know, when the game finally came out, people were like, wow, this game's actually pretty good. And I'm like, I told you so. I told you. I'm like in this little part of the internet saying, hey, I'm raising my hand here. I told you so. I told you so.
I think people were trepidatious because the developer only made first-person shooters, or primarily at least made first-person shooters beforehand. So I don't think they trusted them to make such a drastically different game. But from my perspective, if anything, that should have given people more incentive to look forward to the game because it means that the developer is finally not stuck in a rut doing the same thing. It means now they're more open to be free and creative and to make something that's truly something special.
Yeah. And you know, along the same lines, and I totally agree with what you said, I feel like Sony gives really good support to their first parties when it comes to ideas and concepts, right? I mean, the Uncharted series comes to mind immediately. Like, you went from Jack and Daxter to Uncharted. If you didn't think that was a drastic change in environment, I don't know what is, right? I mean,
no, yeah.
Yeah.
It reminds me of the shift from Sly Cooper to Infamous with Sucker Punch.
Right, exactly. And even further, you know, like kind of going on the Naughty Dog transition, going from Uncharted to The Last of Us, which, you know, there are gameplay elements that are similar to both games, but The Last of Us really hits the emotional chord a lot more, right, in many different ways. So,
yeah. Uncharted is more of Indiana Jones-inspired, like, B-movie entertainment type of thing, where The Last of Us is trying more to be like a gritty, heartfelt, like emotional, engaging type of experience.
Exactly. And, you know, kind of like going to what you said earlier too, kind of returning to that, I feel like for people, for developers who have been stuck doing the same kind of game in the same genre over the past several years, there is that kind of creativity that's kind of waiting to burst out. And this is what we see in Horizon Zero Dawn, which is a freaking technical masterpiece, if you want to think about it this way. Like, its loading times are really super fast. I don't know if you know about this, Daniel, but the environment is actually, you know, like as far as the flora and fauna is actually procedurally generated. So, you know, so that's why the loading times are actually super fast. You know, so it's really crazy the amount of tech that they thought. And it's a thoughtful kind of design of the game, right? Like, it's not like, you know, like they just built the game because, you know, like they, the overlords at Sony, if you will, wanted them to make an open world game. Like, you can tell, like, there is a passion that is dug deep within this game. And that's why it's my number three game of 2017.
I have to ask, did you play through the DLC, the Frozen Wilds?
So here's the funny part about this. Okay. Although we said that all these games would come out, you know, like that are part of our list would come out in 2017, that doesn't necessarily mean that I've beaten them.
Oh, okay.
So, you know, let me clarify this. My girlfriend has had a huge transition this year from being a PC gamer to a console gamer. So what's been happening is that, you know, when we're playing console games, we're playing on the same TV. Sometimes we'd pass the controller. In this case, we played a lot of games on her account. So technically, like, I didn't finish it, but we did play the game all throughout together. And also, you know, you mentioned the Frozen Wilds. Yeah, we did play that together as well, but on her account. Cool. So, but yeah, like, I know the ending. I've fought basically, like, everything all the way up until the end of the game. It's just, if you look at my trophy list, it's not going to say anything because it's like, what? Like, you're only at this part of the game? But I can assure you, though, in my game, I'm way ahead of the current story level. I want to say, like, I'm almost to level 40, and I think the level 50 was, like, the max cap of the original game. But my quest level for, like, the main storyline is, like, level 15 for some reason. So, like, you want to talk overpowered. Yeah, I'm pretty freaking overpowered in Horizon Zero Dawn right now.
Okay, so I haven't played through the game yet. So level 15 is actually, like, really powerful then?
Well, level 50.
Oh, 50. I was like, shit.
Yeah.
Does it take...
Yeah,
I was 50. Like, man, 15, is that like...
Yeah, my actual...
Does it take forever to level up? Like...
No. It's crazy part is that I want to 100% Horizon Zero Dawn, which is why it's taking me forever. I want to platinum this game. I've never had a game that I've ever won a platinum until, you know, Horizon Zero Dawn. So I am literally, like, with a fine-tooth comb going through every single piece of content in each of the areas that I'm in. And if you can imagine that this is a world that's not as big as The Witcher 3, but it's a fairly big size, that is a lot of work to be doing, right?
Wow.
Yeah. So that's why I'm kind of, like, going, you know, like, just playing the game, like, in a speed of a molasses, because not only am I playing this game, and I'm also playing so many other games that have come out during the year, you know, on and off and stuff, because, hey, that's just how I am. The backlog battle is real, man.
Well, not only that, but, like, if you're going to 100% a game, it's better to play it at your own pace so you don't burn yourself out. And you play it in sizable chunks for you get your fill, and then you just put it down when you're done and then come back to it later.
Absolutely, absolutely. And so yeah, that's why it's my top three. It's really great. It's really engaging. Music is fantastic. Voice acting and... You know, voice lip syncing, by the way, is fantastic, because that's a thing apparently that is an issue these days. You know, and gameplay is absolutely phenomenal. There's so many different kinds of robotic animals in the game that it's just so much fun to play. It's really cool. You should play at some point.
I own it, so I will.
That's why I said you should play it. Because there's a difference between owning and playing it. Just,
yes, yeah. I know. Okay. I'll get to it. Don't worry.
Okay. All right. Cool. So, all right. So that's my top three. What's your top three?
I think people might be surprised when they hear that it's not higher on the list, but I'm going to say Nier Automata.
Ooh. Okay. Honestly, while you were deliberating that and kind of hinting at it and stuff, I was kind of, like, for some reason thinking Dark Souls 3, but...
Well, that game came out last year.
Damn it. Okay, that's right. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
It felt like it came out this year. Maybe it's because of the sales.
Yeah, it's probably... The thing is that might be confusing you. I think they came out with the complete edition this
year. Oh, yeah, that's right. Okay, you're right. Because I am also confusing it somehow with Neo, which came out in February, which is kind of a Dark Souls-ish game, but not so much. But anyways, Nier Automata, yeah. Fantastic choice.
Ah, man, I was so happy when I finally was able to beat this game. It was awesome. So, I mean, I could tell, though, that it was still, like, made on the cheap. So, I feel like the game was just shy of its, like, of its full potential. But they, you know, it's like Chris Jericho says, where you are is the place to be. You got to make the most of what you have. Mm-hmm. And even though Yoko Taro and Platinum Games clearly didn't get the budget they deserved, they made the most of what they had. And they still made one of the best games of the year, easily. And I had a few problems here and there, but overall, I was thoroughly impressed and satisfied with Nier Automata.
You know, you'll be really proud of me because, you know, obviously I'm recording this on... We're all recording this on a computer, but that's not the point. The point is that on the left monitor is actually, you know, my English is terrible today. It's probably because of my cold that's kind of going around here. Also, my feet are cold. That's a random thing to think about. On my left monitor is a wallpaper of 2B kicking the shit out of a bunch of robots. So
yeah.
She's smiling right now because she's like, oh yeah, top three, high five.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Man, 2B, I mean... I want to say she's like a great character, but really it's less that her character and more that what they were able to do with her. I don't want to spoil anything, but just what they were able to do with her in the context of the overall story.
Yeah, that's difficult to talk about right now. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't want to spoil it, you know, but I feel that with Nier Automata, it was a really thematically rich game. And I think that made up for the story may not necessarily have been like super engaging all throughout, especially Route B, which felt mostly kind of redundant. I felt that they could have done more with Route B, especially. Mm-hmm. But the themes of like existentialism and what it means to be alive, you know, what it means to be human, and the fact that the robots are copying human behavior, like all of this is just so interesting and it gets you to think about things. And I was really impressed with all of that. And Yoko Taro himself says that he doesn't like to make the same game twice. And it really shows, because if you look at this game and you compare it to the original Nier, they were saying extremely different things. The first Nier had more of a message of, how to justify your actions and how perspectives can change the way you see things. And like, especially since the main character in the first Nier, when you first play that game on the first route, everything seems really justified. But then when you play it again, you come to find out that a lot of it is misunderstandings. And I really enjoy the fact that Nier Automata did not retread that ground and they decided, no, we're gonna say completely different things using the similar narrative tools, because you still do the whole, oh, I'm gonna play through route B, I'm gonna play through route C, but it's actually weirdly kind of a combination of the first Nier and also Drakengard 3, where the different playthroughs are not just like replaying the game, but it's also showing like. It's also extending the story as well, but it even does that in its own unique way too. So I really appreciate about that Yoko Taro, that he always comes up with like new ways to approach like even old concepts that he came up with. Like he twists them in different ways to make it work for the new game.
You know, what's interesting to me about Nier Automata is the way that somebody described it to me. It was like, you know, the gameplay is similar to like a visual novel, like, you know, like not necessarily Danganronpa, but like, you know, the Zero Escape series, where you'll replay the game over and over and stuff, and just because there's like different routes and stuff like that. And I never really thought of it that way. But then like when, you know, when I started actually playing the game, I kind of could see like what people meant by that. And to me, that's actually a very interesting way to you know, to create a game. And I think, you know, what you said earlier about, you know, Platinum and Yoko Taro doing the most of what they have with what little they got, right? Like, this is, I think, the ultimate kind of, you know, depiction of what that means, is like making the most out of what you got. Because, like, really, the game isn't that big compared to most of the other, like, big releases in 2017. Granted, I'm not making a comparison between this game and AAA games, because budget-wise, it's just not, you know, the same, right? But
yeah,
but the density of content that this game had, like, especially if you start doing, like, the side quests and really kind of engaging yourself in the world through those kinds of side quests, you can really see that they tried their best to make the game as rich as possible, like, the environment as rich as possible, you know what I mean?
Absolutely. And it's a matter of, like, quality over quantity, because even, I'm not necessarily saying that a big world is necessarily a bad thing. However, they took advantage of the fact that they had a smaller world, and they tried to meet a higher standard of quality with its smaller world compared
right.
to, you know, other open world games.
It's like they had a baseline, right? They had a baseline of quality that they wanted to achieve that was doable with the budget that they had, right? And they decided carefully to put the details where the details mattered the most.
Yes.
And here's the thing that's kind of like where I'm coming from with this. The reason why 2B is such an iconic character for Nier Automata is because of the choices that they made with animating that character. The very first thing that you notice when you play Nier Automata or watch somebody play Nier Automata is how the ruffles of 2B's skirt just kind of fly and almost look like they're rotating in a circle, almost like a propeller. But it's such a smooth animation that you kind of want to see more of it. It's almost hypnotic in a way, you know? And then couple that with the kind of action that only Platinum games can deliver, you know, you got like a combination of things that, and it, you know, if it was any other director, would feel like very separate, disjointed parts, but it works extremely well for what Nier Automata is. And I'm so happy that this game actually came out in 2017, because now it's like, what, like it sold like 2 million copies, right? Like, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, they didn't expect it to do that well, and it's done so well. In fact, Square Enix is like, oh, maybe we should do more.
Maybe we should give a little bit more money next time, you know?
Please give them more money. Oh, my God.
I mean, it's not going to get to the levels of Final Fantasy, but I think, you know, even a little bit helps. And that's crazy to think that not only did it kind of sell a lot, but it also saved Platinum as well. Like, I keep hearing like it saved Platinum from like obscurity or bankruptcy or some shit like that.
Yeah, I've heard that too. So, I mean, regardless of what you may personally think about the game, whether you love it or hate it, I think the fact that it saved Platinum alone is worth commending it for.
Absolutely. And it did such a fantastic job. Like, just talking about it with you makes me want to play it again, because I really love the action. The music is from the guy who composes music for like the Tekken series. Like, how is that possible?
It's amazing.
Yeah,
the music is so good.
Yeah, I mean, no offense to like his compositions in Tekken, but these songs are sweeping. Like the camp music, the resistance camp music. Like, I had that on loop for like about a month while I was working on stuff. Like, because it was so engaging that I would just wanted to listen to it all day. It's crazy.
No, I totally get you. The music, I personally prefer the music of the first game a little bit more, but the music in the second game is like, it's like right there. It's so amazing. Yeah. The music fits the game like a glove. It's awesome.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I gotta say, I'm pretty content with Nier Automata being number three for me. So, Alex, okay, what is your number two?
Ooh. I've been thinking about this for days, ever since we decided to, you know, to do the end of the year game of the year in the way that we're doing it now. And people might be surprised. People might not be surprised. But they should know that my top two game of 2017 is Super Mario Odyssey.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So we talked a lot about this game over the past, you know, several weeks and stuff. And, you know, it was really crazy when I was thinking about, like, what my second game is of the year. And I feel like I am more akin to Mario than Aloy in Horizon Zero Dawn. And even saying that feels wrong for me because I really truly love both games equally. But if I had to pick one over the other, and it's not because of nostalgia, it's gotta be Super Mario Odyssey. And, you know, I'm a huge platformer fan. Like, you know, really huge. And I value the gameplay of platforming pretty high up, I would say, in a pantheon of, like, you know, genre lists and stuff. You know, like, JRPG and RPG in general, like, just is a little bit higher than it, but I started with platformers when I was playing video games, and of course it'll have a special, you know, chord, like, in my brain, where it's like, hey, you know, they just released a new Mario. But it also helps that this Mario is a combination of two, or maybe even three, of my favorite Mario games, which, you know, there are parts, you know, Super Mario Galaxy in some ways, there are parts Super Mario Sunshine, and of course, part Super Mario 64, which I didn't like, but we'll not get into that. So,
ooh, hot take.
Hot take. But imagine all those three games combined into one really solid foundation where there's even stuff beyond the end of the game for you to kind of keep pursuing, collecting all of the different power moons in the game. I mean, it's a small edit, it's a small kind of addition, but it adds so much more replay value and encourages you to come back for even more. And that's why I love Super Mario Odyssey. It's really fantastic, and damn, the music is fucking good. Like, have you ever actually ranted about how good the music is for a damn Mario game? Because this one has. I mean, you've seen the trailers where Pauline is singing, like, the new Donk City song, right? Like, I mean,
yeah,
it's pretty fucking nuts. And here we are.
It's good.
Yeah, and here we are in 2017 talking about a Mario game with good soundtrack, fantastic gameplay, which, by the way, people are still learning how to min-max the jumping system, by the way, in Super Mario Odyssey. Like, really.
Oh, wow, that's nuts.
Really trying to maximize, like, the potential of how you can really get further in the world. That's actually happening still. And it's great. It's great to know that there people are still trying to find reasons on how to, and finding ways to kind of beat the game in very different ways. So, yeah.
That's interesting. I didn't realize that people were still figuring new stuff out. Like, by this point, you'd think, like, a game would be mostly figured out by now, but the fact that people are still figuring out new stuff about his movement,
breath,
and
yeah,
his jumping mechanics, that's awesome.
Yeah, that's the thing that's kind of crazy, is the combination of all of the previous Mario skills that you've known, plus the inclusion of Cappy, actually really makes the jumping a little bit more skill-based than anything else. And that's kind of, like, why I've been thinking about going back to it from time to time, because I do, this is one of those games where I do want to collect all the power moons, of which there are almost 1,000 of them in the entire game, which is insane. And, you know, it's interesting because I talked to a friend about this, and I mentioned this in a previous episode of the podcast without mentioning any game names. We felt that Mario Odyssey, even though, like, it was this sweeping adventure through many different worlds, it was literally a game that you can plop into your Switch, play it, and actually get a lot out of it only by playing a few minutes, if that makes sense.
No, I get you.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, I still don't have a Switch, so I haven't played Mario yet. Don't kill me. But, you know, hearing you be so enthusiastic about it, you know, it definitely makes me want to play it. Like, I'm not like, I like Mario, but I'm not like super huge into Mario or anything like that. But everything I've seen about Odyssey, I look at it, I'm like, yeah, that looks like fun. I want to do that. I want to jump around with a goofy mustache and throw my cap.
And that's the key part of this game, is that it's fun. You know, it is a platformer. It has its strict moments. But, you know, just the little bit of changes, the tinge of change that they've introduced with Cappy being able to be a platform by himself just by holding the button down, or even being able to possess different enemies. Well, I'm sorry, not possess. Nintendo's going to freak out if I say the word possess, because the marketing term for it is capture, because Cappy is a cap. Okay. All right. Nintendo, you happy? Okay. And just being able to do that, right? Like, I remember there was a section in the game where there was this huge jump that I needed to do, and I needed to capture, like, a jumping fireball. And I was like, wow, I needed to do that? And, of course, that created a whole, you know, world of possibilities in my brain. Because it's like, now I can actually swim in fire. So what, you know, places where fire is available, can I swim through now? Because now I'm this fireball thing, you know, like it's interesting how much wider the world becomes by capturing things and mastering the jumping mechanics. And if somebody is able to actually chain possession, capture with the jumping mechanics, I mean, I know Nintendo's going to freak out. It's like, what do you mean possess? It's capture. And anyways, I think that'll be an interesting thing, and I want people to keep playing this game because it's really fantastic. And again, like, I'm having so much fun playing it, even though I've beaten the game, right? There's still so much more to discover, and the story doesn't end when you beat the game. So, just a little bit of a tease, a little bit.
I mean, I've looked up some videos, and it looks like there is tons of things to do. There's a breadth of content.
Yeah.
And I think that's a good thing. I mean, you want people to come back and keep playing your game. And I'm glad that Nintendo are realizing that, and they're filling these games chock, like, look at Zelda Breath of the Wild as well. Like, that game is chock full of content and things to do.
Yeah.
So it seems to me like moving forward, Nintendo is basically saying, listen, we know that you guys love to sit down, play these games for hours on end. So you know what? That's what we're going to do. We're going to make it so that you're going to want to keep playing these games for several hours, and you're going to keep coming back for more.
It's kind of like what you said with Nier Automata too, right? Like, Nintendo doesn't have a lot of budget. They think that, you know, they're probably making this with like a huge, you know, like AAA budget is a little bit foolish, I think. But what they're able to do with how small of a budget they have, I mean, I'm not saying they have piss poor budget either, but, you know, they're able to make smart decisions to make a game that feels big, right? Like, Mario Odyssey had no place to feel big, but it does. You know, and if you really think about and distill the actual gameplay design of the game, it's pretty damn simple. But for some reason, they were able to maximize, you know, like, the worlds they've created, add more challenges and stuff to make it feel like it's really substantial. You know, one thing that I really like with Odyssey is that even if you beat the game, there are things that you actually can't access until you actually beat the game, which is really interesting of an idea. You know, it's almost like, you know, in Super Mario Brothers 1, when you replay the game, all like the Koopas all of a sudden become like the little beetle guys, like the armored beetle guys, which is a weird change, but it does happen. So,
well, yeah, it's another way for Nintendo to give the players more incentive to keep playing the games. It adds to the game's longevity.
Exactly. So, and, you know, again, to kind of just revisit a question, you know, people might have, like, well, why is this over Horizon Zero Dawn? Well, you know, I have a soft spot for Mario. And as much as I love the exploration of Horizon Zero Dawn, there are times where I kind of sometimes feel a little bit exhausted, not because it's a bad game, but because, you know, like, there's only so much hunting you can do. Let's put it that way in the game. But in Mario, you can do whatever you want. You can jump, grind, you know, even capture bullet bills and just kind of wander aimlessly if you want to, or even find the next secret. It's, you know, the possibilities are almost endless. So that's my top two game of 2017. So
excellent.
Yeah. So, Daniel, I am really curious, if Nier Automata is your top three, I wonder what your top two is.
Yeah, what the hell is my top two? Because Nier set the set the fucking bar pretty high. Yeah, so.
I think so. Like, I really thought that the year was going to be either top, like, top one or top two on your list, because I feel like even though, like, I haven't mentioned Nier Automata yet. You see what I did there?
You sly boy, you.
Thank you. I pride myself in that. Again, like, I'm kind of like, I'm sniffling here with like all the boogers coming out of my nose, but I'm being very sly. Yes, that's disgusting. Happy New Year, by the way, to people. You'd be glad to know that the Backlog Battle Podcast's classiness has not changed, even in 2018. Yeah, so what the hell is your number two? Like, how the hell could this be your number two? Like, and how does Nier Automata fall into this? Tell me now.
It's Yakuza 0.
Whoa, really?
Yep.
Over Nier Automata?
Yes.
Okay, so first of all, why Yakuza 0?
Now, in terms of story, I actually like both of them roughly the same, because I feel that while the story in Nier Automata isn't super actively engaging all the time, it's very thematically rich, which makes up for it. And it's the opposite in Yakuza 0, where, I mean, I don't think Yakuza 0 is really saying much about like the human condition or anything, you know, philosophical or anything crazy like that.
Right.
However, it, you know, and it is instead super engaging from start to finish. You know, you really are invested in the characters and you want to know what happens next. So, and I feel that on that end, they kind of balance each other out. And I end up enjoying the stories of both of them roughly about the same. Does that make sense?
That makes sense. But let's be honest here, Daniel. The reason why Yakuza 0 is above Nier Automata is because you really, truly enjoyed running your own cabaret club. Am I right? I mean, you know, I'm pretty sure that, you know, that old lady is like your number one, like, income revenue generator out of like all your girls. Am I right? My right.
Dude, I'm not even gonna lie. I maxed out almost every cabaret girl.
Wow. Okay.
All of them, except for like a few bronze ones, which I was like, I'm not gonna bother with them. But almost all of them are on the max level.
Yeah, you want to talk about a game that I want to go back to and really freaking platinum? Yakuza 0 is like one of those games where I'm like, you know, I dread playing the slot car racing because so many of my friends have told me like that's the like one of the most difficult racing games they've ever played in their entire freaking life. But man,
that fucking RNG, man, it screws you over.
It does, man. Oh gosh.
But so, while the gameplay in Nier Automata was enjoyable for what it was, I don't think it compares to Yakuza Zero's. I found the combat to be more enjoyable, and I loved all the mini games. I loved all the side quests, the sub stories. Like, Nier Automata had a few interesting side quests here and there, but almost all of the ones in Yakuza Zero brought a smile to my face because of how goofy they were, how over the top and ridiculous they were, all the crazy situations that Majima and Kiryu would be put in. And I just, every time I would play that game, I was so fully invested in everything I was doing. Like, hey, now it's time to do the real estate side business thing.
Yeah.
Fuck yeah, let's do it. And I maxed it out. I did everything that you could do.
Yeah.
Like, there's not a whole lot of games I can think of where it would implore me that much to just go out of my way to do so much in it. I just had so much fun running around, beating the shit out of dudes, making tons of money, and then on one hand, playing as this big, buff Yakuza motherfucker, and then he's playing with the circuit cars. Like,
yeah.
Everything about the world of Yakuza, just like, it felt like it welcomed me to just like enjoy its world to its fullest.
Yeah, and pure absurdity as well.
And yes, including its absurdity. I also felt that it was such a substantial step up from Yakuza 5, which I felt was kind of a disappointing game in the series. And Yakuza 0, like, just ups that game in almost every way. Like, it's my favorite Yakuza game for sure.
Yeah.
And that's why I feel that it is my second favorite game of the year. It is not only a great game in its own right, it is, for my money, the best Yakuza game, and that is a great series.
Yeah, fantastic series. And I can't wait for Yakuza 6. That's going to be an amazing game.
Not only that, but the remake for Yakuza 2, Yakuza Kiwami 2, that is going to be awesome, because Yakuza 2 is a great game, and I am really excited to relive that game, minus all the PS2 jank.
Yeah, I hope like it'll have more content than Kiwami, though, because I mean, Kiwami was a good remake, but it felt hollow, and not like in a bad way, but it felt like, in terms of the amount of content, it felt a little bit hollow after, you know, playing it, you know, after Yakuza 0. But then again, it's $30, so it's, you know.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, it was like half the price, so, you know, cut him a little slack.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah, I am. You know, like, it's just tough to, like, kind of not say anything about it, because also Yakuza 5 was also $30, if you remember.
Yeah, but the problem with Yakuza 5 was that it was, like, bloated. Like, it had, honestly, I felt like it had too much content.
I kind of liked the bloated content. I personally like Haruka's storyline. Like, that whole chapter was actually one of my favorites.
Okay, yeah, I will agree with you. Okay. But here's the thing, though. I liked her arc as well, but my problem was, like, it didn't really add much to the overall story. Like, it was just kind of, like, thrown in there.
That's true. I guess you're right about that. It is interesting, though, like how they have like different thematic elements and stuff. Like, you know, I forgot like what the thematic element for like 5 was, that, you know, which is why they had this many characters.
Dreams.
Oh, that's right. Yes, I remember that. Dreams.
That was so annoying. Like, throughout Yakuza 5, you have these grown men in their 40s and 50s, and they're all going on about their dreams. And I'm like, are you fucking serious?
Hey, man, you know, DDP was 38 years old when he started wrestling. They're right. They have the right to dream, okay? I'm just saying.
Man, once in a while, okay, fine. But, like, if I like almost every other cutscene, you know, I can hear the Japanese voice actor say Yume being, yeah, they said the word dream so many times in that game, I learned what it was in Japanese.
Wow.
That's bad.
Okay, I see your point. I still like the game, but you
it's not a bad game.
Yeah.
I'm not saying it's a bad game. Okay. I'm just saying that, like, playing Yakuza 0,
it's a contrast, right?
Yeah, compared to Yakuza 5, it was like, holy shit, like, what a substantial step up.
Oh, yeah, quality. It's, Yakuza 0 was just phenomenal in general. So, yeah, that's a really good top two. Like, wow, yeah, okay, I can see why Nier Automata took a little bit of a backseat to Yakuza 0, because now I'm thinking about it and talking to you with it. Man, Yakuza 0 did deliver a lot of freaking content.
Yakuza 0 was so good, man. Like,
yeah. Wow, that was uncomfortable. We just both, like groaned and moaned. I was like, oh, dear, what's happening to this episode? Man.
It's getting hot and steamy in here. Oh, man.
I've touched a raging clue right now. God, South Park, what are you doing to me?
All right, but moving on to the number two, we have to tell the audience, man, what is our number one? We have to start with you, man. What is your game of the year?
Okay, that's too much pressure. That's too much pressure.
I'm sorry. You're the one that decided, like, hey, let's do the fucking game of the year show.
I was the idiot who basically said, hey, I'm gonna go first before you. Okay.
I mean, you made your bed, now lie in it.
I will soon. So let's recap what we have first, in case people forgot. So all right. So my number two, or actually, we'll go the other way. My number three was Horizon Zero Dawn. Great game. My number two was Super Mario Odyssey. So my number one would naturally be, what do you think?
I don't know.
You don't?
I mean, you were kind of being a sly boy before, so maybe near?
I love how you're like, oh, maybe her. So I gotta give some context to this. Like earlier today, when we were talking about like how the format is for like the top three, you know, Daniel actually originally wanted the honorable mentions to go before the top one, and I told him like, no, we should not do that because by then we would be narrowing down what games we would have for top one, especially yes. if people are intimately attuned to what we have played throughout the year. So this is why we're actually doing the top ones first before the honorable mentions, because it's, you know, it builds the suspense. So yeah, but I want to take this opportunity to actually plug the Amazon link, which is bit.ly/AmazonBacklogBattle. If you were really enthused by like our praises and memories of all the games that we have mentioned so far and are about to mention, please consider buying them on Amazon using our link, bit.ly/AmazonBacklogBattle. We don't get much from these purchases, but every little bit helps. Once again, that link is bit.ly/AmazonBacklogBattle. And hopefully you guys are enjoying the episode so far.
And you can trust us. I mean, we got good taste.
You're right. I hope so. Now, the long-awaited moment is finally here.
Oh, man.
The end of the year, Game of the Year 2017. Game of the Year! That sounds really redundant for me. And I've deliberated this many, 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 many weeks. I'm talking about like when all these games came out, including the ones that I've mentioned, including the ones that you've mentioned, I have labored through what number one should be. And despite my feelings about how the game treats you like a total douche face within the first hour, which, by the way, if you are listening or watching this episode on YouTube, we do have a triplay of it that's already out this past Monday. That game is Persona 5. Yeah? I heard a thud.
God damn. What a great choice.
It is. So the reason why I kind of said what I said is that, you know, the biggest kind of thing that really bothered me about the game was the way that everybody treated you at the beginning of the game. And this is not really a spoiler. If you think this is a spoiler, you obviously did not watch the triplay this week, in which case you should check it out now because that's my game of the year. So stuff it. Everybody's like so aggro with you in the very beginning of the game. And I was thinking to myself, how many people who are, you know, who aren't, I don't want to say like, you know, I'm trying to find like a good PC word to like to describe them. Like people who can be easily offended, I guess that would be like the best way to describe it, right? Like
people who are sensitive.
Sensitive, thank you. I'm one of those people, right? And even I was kind of feeling a little bit, you know, kind of taken aback by the accusations and the aggressiveness of how that game starts. But then the other side of me has thought like, well, what JRPG has actually made you feel this way? And is this a valid, you know, kind of feeling to have? And I'm not excusing what they did. I feel like they had to have a precedent to make you feel this way. Because when you get to the other side of the rainbow, when you finally max out, you know, some of your confidants, you know, with the same people that have been totally mean to you and stuff, there is a great payoff there that you certainly feel like you've undergone a journey of sorts. And it's a different kind of journey. I almost said journey, jorts, whatever.
Sojourney Weaver?
Sojourney Weaver. but it's weird because like it's a different kind of journey that you would normally take in a JRPG. Like most JRPGs are even medieval fantasy, futuristic fantasy, or what have you, but the Persona series has always been grounded towards convention and modern living, right? Like what's going on during the time frame. And you know, and I think that because it's so grounded in reality and in many ways, right, that the payoff at the other end feels so much more rewarding. And you know, and couple that with a fantastic battle system that kind of foregoes most of the menu selection that you start off with when it comes to battle, and just assigning an ability to a button, making it feel like a much more visceral kind of game. Seamless transitions between different scenes to battle, to the dungeon, to the actual, you know, everyday activities. And time and topical ones, right? Like, for example, if you're transitioning to an area that's raining, instead of a normal, you know, loading screen, you're going to have like a loading screen filled with like moving umbrellas. It's like the small details and the presentation coupled with Shoji Meguro's music, you know, and the visceralness of the gameplay, the kinds of values that the confidants like give you when it comes to dungeon exploration, confidant build up, you know, like skill build up, you know, and all those kinds of things, like they all gel so well together that it's impossible to just take one part of Persona 5 and say that's the best part of Persona 5, because you will be completely fooling yourself, because everything in Persona 5 is really fantastic. There's even a moment when I hated Ryuji as a character. By the end of the game, I realized that the aesthetic that the game had, the feeling, the presentation and everything, he was the embodiment of the entirety of Persona 5. Not saying that he's the main character, but like the feel and the look and the presentation of it is really like that punk aesthetic that, you know, like the, you know, screw the government, you're a screw whatever, like kind of like rebellion that was happening in the game is pretty, he pretty much is that, you know?
See, and you were talking about before about how the game made you feel a certain way. I actually think that strengthens that feeling of the thematic core of the game of rebels and going against society and like punk and all of that. Like, because during that part of the game, you feel like an outcast, and you feel like, you know, you want to show those people up.
Yeah, you feel battered down, right?
Yeah, and Ryuji is like right there with you. He's also similarly an outcast, and he feels ostracized by the school. And, you know, so I feel like what you're saying now, if anything, it empowers that part of the game, and it ties together even more strongly and makes this game that much better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think this is going to be a very controversial statement, but I'll say it anyway. I like 4 Golden better than 5, but it's not because 5 is an inferior game. I feel that 4 is, you know, I feel that 4, you know, is something that I truly like because of the thematics of it, you know, like being in the province and stuff like that. But as far as 5 goes, it is bar none the best Persona 5, but Persona game. I mean, of course it's the best Persona 5. It's the only Persona 5 until Crimson comes out. But
Persona 5 is indeed the best
Persona 5. Oh man, this is crazy. Maybe it's the sweater, I don't know. I knew somehow, like, me having cold feet, like literally cold feet, might have some problems with today's recording, but hey, it's turning out really well, I think. But you know, Persona 5, I feel, is the best Persona game out there, because even if I do go back to Persona 4 Golden, the social links don't compare to like the perks in the confidant system and how all those kind of coalesce together to make like a really different battle system. Like, we're talking like significant changes to the battle system just because you're a confidant with somebody like at a really high level. That to me is amazing. Like, those are options not available in 4, you know. And again, the only reason why like 4 trumps 5 for me, like from a personal standpoint, is the thematics. But man, talk about music, talk about the gameplay, talk about in terms of the story. Mind you, I'm making a substantial, you know, point to separate theme and story here, because those can be two very different things, right?
Absolutely. I hope.
Okay, great. I'm glad you agree with me. Persona 5, hands down, best game in the series, like bar none.
Well, the theme is like kind of like an idea or a message that is implied through the events of the story.
Right. And I'm not saying, and again, like, don't read into what I just said because, you know, oh man, you like this thing less. No, actually I don't. So, you know, and it's not like a flip-floppy kind of situation either, because I think that, you know, the theme of Persona 5 is really strong as well. But personal preferences, you know, like, if you want to talk about that, obviously, but despite that, despite all the hullabaloo that I said, Persona 5 stands pretty damn tall, like, amongst all the games that I played in 2017, and there were, like, a shit ton of them in 2017. I'm getting exhausted just thinking about everything I played in 2017. It's kind of crazy.
Absolutely. This is the hardest game of the year list to compile out of like every year in gaming. Like Jesus Christ, this year is insane.
Okay, so that's my game of the year. And again, like we have a triplay of it that just came out on this past Monday. If you want to relive the first few moments of Persona 5 with me and stuff, you know, and follow the adventures of Morgan Freeman. You heard that right. It's Morgan Freeman's storyline for my Persona 5 playthrough. Because everything is great when Morgan Freeman narrates everything. You guys should check out that triplay. Anyways.
Interesting.
Yeah. I don't actually know how my Morgan Freeman impression is. I think it's okay. It's not the best, but you just have to watch it. Anyways. So we've delayed your revelation long enough, sir. What is your top end of the year, game of the year game for 2017?
You're gonna kill me. It's also Persona 5.
I knew it. I kind of knew it. I knew it. So okay, so easily enough, explain why that over Yakuza 0 and Nier Automata, because I honestly, like, I had this weird feeling that Yakuza 0 was going to be your top one. So I was kind of surprised that Yakuza 0 became your top two. I was like, huh, this is interesting. I wonder what the top one is going to be. It's probably going to be like a JRPG. And if anything, it's probably going to be Persona 5. And I'm right.
Realistically, I think I like both of them about the same. But the reason I put Persona 5 just a little bit ahead of Yakuza 0... part of it, I think, is also that we have gotten like plenty of great Yakuza content in general, and it feels like for Persona, at least, when it's even though it might not seem that way given all the crazy spinoffs that 4 had, especially, but like for a proper Persona game, the releases are kind of few and far between.
Yeah, about it, we got Persona 4, like the main game in the series, almost a decade ago.
Right. Yeah. So, and one may argue that may not be entirely fair of me, but, you know, like I said before, realistically speaking, I probably like them about the same. But I still feel that I'm fine giving the slight edge to Persona 5 because it overall felt like more of an event. Like, I was pretty fucking excited to play Persona 5. And don't get me wrong, I was excited to play Yakuza 0 as well, but like it hadn't been that long since I played, you know, Yakuza 5. And when was the last time I played Persona 4? Fucking long time ago.
Yeah.
And Persona 5 met all of my expectations. It was exactly what I wanted it to be. And that's a great feeling for a game to be like, you have high expectations for a game and those expectations are met.
Mm-hmm.
That's awesome. Yeah. That's a rare feeling to have.
Yeah.
And while I feel like Persona 5, similarly, to Nier Automata, it's more thematically rich compared to having like a super engaging story to start to finish. Not to say that the story wasn't engaging in Persona 5. It was. Just that, you know, similar to Nier Automata, it wasn't like super engaging from like start to finish.
Now, okay, my question is it because maybe of how you initially felt about the game? Because like I said, like I feel like that opening in Persona 5 is so strong and so like kind of, I don't want to say over the top. Over the top is a bad word for it. But like it's so overtly in your face, right? That everybody is just against you and stuff. Like, do you feel like it's because of that that it almost a part of you didn't want to hear more of it in a way? And
liked that.
Okay.
Because I thought it was interesting and unique. I'm like, oh, okay. You know, because in Persona 4, when you come to town, everyone's like, oh my God, you're such a cool guy.
Mm-hmm.
So I actually thought it was neat that it was the opposite in 5, where like you're a piece of shit and no one likes you.
And also one thing of note is that, you know, in the beginning of the game, they do tell you that you come from the province. So even though the games aren't connected canonically, and of course the characters don't look the same, if you played the previous games, it's almost like a weird recognition of where you just played or came from. You know what I mean? So it's an interesting contrast to that.
Absolutely. And not only that, but I feel that with that start of the game where everyone hates you, I think it just makes it that much more satisfying, especially with, like, you know, Kojiro. Like
Sojiro?
Sojiro, my bad. So, like, with Sojiro, for example, at the beginning of the game, he is like, you're a fucking punk. He doesn't want to have anything to do with you. You're more like a burden to him. And he's just like, he treats you like shit.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that makes it that much more, it makes it that much better, where throughout the course of the game, he slowly warms up to you. He starts to care more about you. And then by the end of it, he kind of feels like he's your uncle almost. Like,
yeah.
You start to grow with these characters. And I feel that, you know, you didn't really have that as much in the previous games, where it seemed like they already kind of liked you and then they just grew to like you more. So it felt like in this game with certain characters, you were like winning them over.
Yeah.
I really liked that.
That's kind of like what I meant earlier when I said, like, there is like a journey here. Like, I guess to be clear, it's an emotional journey for your character, because you can define journey in very different ways, right? Like in this case, because of its modern setting, there's not much to really traverse in a modern city, you know, but what they've actually done is they've kind of reversed that inwardly so that it's more of an emotional journey. And like you said, like, it feels much richer because there is that arc where your character travels to in relation to that character. And the same could be said about many different characters in the game, right? Like, you know, like from the shogi player that you met to the guy who sells you guns. It's some really interesting storylines that they tell as well that are, again, grounded in reality, but again, like, it, you feel so fulfilled helping these people out. And also the game, you know, I think this game, more so than Persona 4 and 3, which, again, this is another plus of Persona 5, this is, like, I feel the first game that really truly acknowledged your confidant's connections with the main character to even make the events, you know, at the end of the game even richer, if you know what
Absolutely.
I mean.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And I also really liked that they improved the system, where before you could fuse together monsters a little bit better and you'd get some bonus experience out of it. Like, it was cool, but like, you were mostly doing the social links, not for gameplay reasons, but because you just wanted to see the social links.
Right.
So I'm glad that in Persona 5, they gave you even more of a gameplay incentive. So not only do you have like these really interesting social links, but now the game is giving you these really great abilities along with it, not on top of the bonus experience when you do the demon fusion. It's fucking great.
Yeah. And to kind of even add to that, like I've mentioned before, you know, these abilities aren't just exclusive to, you know, like, to the Persona fusions, like you said, but also can improve various aspects of dungeon exploration and how you handle battles. Like, there's one particular one where I'm not going to mention what it is in the event that people haven't played it, but let's just say that without spoiling too much of it, it'll allow you to use more than 4 characters on screen, you know, like at in one battle. Let's put it that way. You know what I'm talking about, right?
Yeah.
that one alone, like, my mind blew up when I saw that option. I was like, are you shitting me? I am able to do this? Like, this is crazy shit here. Like, I've never seen that in a Persona before where they're just like, well, you're doing this. And there's many more of that sort, of similar kinds. I'm not going to say, like, exactly how they are similar, but it's... there's some crazy things that Persona 5 does, which if you think about the idea of rebellion, which is, you know, to basically like rally against like, you know, a convention, this game is almost doing that for the genre as well, which is insane to think about.
Totally agree. I mean, Persona 5, the more I think about it, the more like, yeah. This is my favorite Persona game.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, you know, really loved 3 and 4. And there might... and, I, you know, a lot of people will disagree with me on that. And they'll say, like, no, 4 is better, 3 is better. And I can understand that. Because I feel that 3 and 4 have certain elements that are stronger than 5. But the reason why I think 5 is the best is because it's a more consistent experience. It may not necessarily hit the same highs as some of the previous games, but it's never hitting the same low lows either.
Right, right.
Everything about it felt more polished, more well thought out. Everything was more consistently good. Like, yeah. I can't think of anything in Persona 5 that I felt was like supremely lacking.
I mean, you know, talking about the feature I just talked about, that could break any game. It's such a game-breaking feature that you're thinking, like, how the hell is this even okay for this game, right? You know, it's one thing that I can think of is that the entire experience is a manicured experience. And what I mean by that is that every single choice of how you can change the gameplay a little bit, and even talking about, like, Persona Fusion, right? In Persona Fusion, you can't fuse, you know, more than two Personas together anymore. There isn't that silly like 1, 2, 3, 5 and whatever. It's just like the pre-made stuff, right? Like to get like, you know, the higher level personas. You know what I'm talking about, right?
So no.
One thing that I found funny is when my girlfriend and I started playing Persona 5, like she was complaining that you couldn't fuse like 3 or 5 like or 4 personas together because guess what? You know, like that's the way she actually got rid of a lot of cards she didn't need. But then I bet the developers were thinking, like, you know, we should treat these guys like they're really important. So we're not going to let you just, you know, like, just haphazardly, like, you know, fuse, like, 6 or 3 or 4 personas. We'll just make very specific ones fuse, you know, if you need, like, more than 2 or 3 cards together. Which I think is a very calculated change on the developer's part. And
yeah, I think it works.
Yeah, and that's why I mean it feels manicured, because like all these moments, like all these kinds of like, you know, changes to the battle system, the presentation, the snappiness of how the battles are with like assigning like, you know, a button to a command, it's all calculated. I mean, again, we're talking about almost a decade that they were building this game, you know, up until from 2008 conceptually to like, you know, 2016 when it's actually, you know, released in Japan. It's kind of crazy to think that how amazing this is. And you know, you want to talk about like exciting, I mean, Project ReZero is gonna be a pretty damn exciting venture for them, because again, all these guys are making a game that, you know, we talked earlier when we were talking about like Horizon Zero Dawn about, you know, first person shooter developers being stuck making the same game for the past several years. What more would, you know, the Persona team making Persona games over the course of like a little bit over a decade, and now they're actually making a medieval fantasy RPG? What the hell are they going to make this time? You know what I mean?
It's going to be awesome.
Right?
It has to be. I mean, these guys have proven themselves to be up to the task.
Exactly. So, I mean, that's so I'm hoping that for any of the fans out there who are huge fans of like Persona 5 and Persona series in general, you're now feeling the same excitement that I had when I heard that their, you know, Guerrilla was making Horizon Zero Dawn, which is, again, far and away not a safe game for them to make, but it turned out to be fantastic. And this new RPG that they're making, however long it's going to take, by the time it comes out, is going to be really, really good. Man, I just,
absolutely,
man, I can't wait. I'm just thinking about that right now, and just all the artwork, you know, that we've seen is just flying into my brain. I'm like, oh man, that's gonna be a good fantasy RPG, man. Oh,
I can't wait. It's gonna be awesome. I mean, these guys have made some pretty phenomenal stuff, and to see them venture off into something else, I'm really excited to see them bring that same level of, you know, thoughtful game design and creativity into some different type of game. I'm really looking forward to it.
Same. So unfortunately, that is not 2017. That is whatever 20 whatever that game is gonna come out.
Yeah, let's hope it doesn't take another like 10 years to get another game. That's the worst part.
Yeah, that's the worst part of this, is the waiting, right? So anyways, That is our top three. So I was going to recap your top three, but we'll do that. We'll do that now. So your top three was Nier Automata. Your top two was Yakuza 0, and of course your top one is Persona 5. Which, hey, if you've been listening to this podcast for a while now, you know that I was gonna pick like a JRPG from the very beginning, and it was just a matter of time until we get to this point where you can finally confirm that. And again, Anthony, if you're listening to this, you're totally wrong. Yeah. It so happens that his prediction turned out to be a top three. So
it was close. Close,
by three. Okay. Yeah. So anyways, so I think it's time for us to actually hand out our little bit of awards and attention to the honorable mentions. Now, honorable mentions, they're not any of the top threes that we mentioned, but you know, especially for our lists, right? But we want to kind of like recognize them for very different ways. And, you know, I think you should do one and then I'll do another one if you want to do it that way, Daniel.
Sure. Yeah. Sure. So this honorable mention, I'm going to give the very specific distinction of the game that I felt had the best writing out of any game that I played this year.
Ooh.
And that game is Tales of Berseria.
Wow. Okay. I was wondering where that game was in your pantheon of lists. I'm actually kind of glad that it's an honorable mention.
I really wanted it to be in the top three, but unfortunately, the gameplay in it, while it's still good, is not on the same level as some previous games in the series. And I felt like more could have been done to make it better. But regardless, I still think it's a really great entry in the series. And again, it is, for my money, the best written game this year, at least that I've played. Now, I was mentioning before about how about themes and story engagement for Persona 5 and Nier Automata and Yakuza 0. I feel that Tales of Berseria ticks all of the boxes. It has a consistently engaging story from start to finish and is thematically rich, with the core theme of logic and reason versus emotion. How these elements play into our decision making and how they shape our worldviews and how they affect people's behavior. And it's story is so interesting. Right from the start of the game, it starts so well. Like it starts so unassuming at first, and it doesn't take very long for shit to go down. Mm-hmm. And then after that, like the game story doesn't let up. And the cast of characters is phenomenal. This is such a really great cast of characters. I absolutely, even the weaker in the cast, like Rokuro, who is this demon that is on this this revenge streak to kill his own brother. Not because like he really hates his brothers like for a personal reason, but just because he as a demon feels compelled to kill him because his brother is stronger than him.
Mm.
Like like that's that I would consider is the weakest character in the cast in terms of how well written.
Yeah. But kind of like going by what you said though, like I've had the pleasure to be able to play Tales of Berseria, you know, close to its launch. And I gotta say, I agree with you with all the points too, you know, like that whole first scene, like you want to talk about a triplay I should have done. This was one of those triplays where if I just ended it at that point, and Daniel, you know what I'm talking about, at what point, right?
Of
I mean,
of course.
Yeah. You would have been like, that's it? You're not going to continue playing the game? How much is Berseria right now on Amazon? Yeah, that's like the point where you're like, I want to get the game because I want to know what the hell happened after that. You know, like it's got that thing got me hook, line, and sinker. And I agree with you, especially with the gameplay points, because again, this is like the first Tales game that I've seriously played since Vesperia. And while I might have nostalgia glasses on, I still prefer like Vesperia's gameplay over this because, like, there, you know, I'm not going to get into it too much, but like, But the one thing that really made me play the game further than I have been compared to any other Tales game prior to it was definitely the story and the character development. It's absolutely fantastic.
I especially really loved the relationship between Velvet and the young Moloch. It's like a weird like mother son, but also like brother sister, like
familial.
That's kind of what I like about it, where you can't put like a specific label on it. It's a and you could say that about a lot of the relationships in the game, especially with the party members. Like there's not like really specific labels. They're complicated, like real relationships.
Mm-hmm.
And the story just kept me engaged from start to finish, even if there were certain parts of the story that were not like specifically geared towards progressing the plot, were still engaging in some way, either because it added to one of the characters in one of their arcs, or it led to an interesting character moment or something like that. Like I never felt like I was bored watching any of the cutscenes. Everything felt like it was in service to either like the main story or at least in service to like character development. Like it was consistently engaging from start.
Right. I agree. Like it's again, like I wish I had Berseria again, but somehow I want to say I sold it for some other game. Yeah, that happened, but it is what it is. I think I traded it.
Friendship over. Get out of here.
I want to say I might have traded it in for credit for like the Rabbids Kingdom battle because my girlfriend wanted it. So,
well, okay, if it was for your girlfriend, then I all right, fine.
Hey, but you know what?
You're off the hook.
But you know what? I've been looking for sales on that game, and I will pick it up again once you know it drops in price and stuff. Like 30 is a little bit too high for me still. I'm thinking within the next few months it's going to drop lower than that, and I got my eye on that. Trust me.
All right, fair enough. Fair enough.
Yes. Okay, so I guess you're gonna throw the ball back in my court, or how are we doing?
Yeah. What is your honorable mention?
I mean, I have a lot of honorable mentions, so I don't. Do you have more than one?
I was mainly thinking of Berseria. I didn't have any other one.
Okay. Yeah, I was thinking of more than one, but maybe.
Oh, I can think. I can mention a few others.
Okay,
that was the one I mainly wanted to talk to.
Okay. Well, good either way. So I'm mentioning this game because not only is this a fantastic, you know, game in general, and makes us really hopeful about the future of the series, but it was something that we felt was a return to form for a long running franchise. We've enjoyed for the past several decades or so. And of course, I'm talking about Resident Evil 7. which
yep.
Yeah. Okay. I was trying to figure out like if that was the one you were thinking of, but you know,
I was actually going to say that one as my honorable mention. You know, whatever.
Well, you can say it too, goddammit, if you want to add in, obviously, but you know.
Well, we're talking about it now, so whatever.
Yeah, I know. I'm just saying. So I'm putting this in as an honorable mention because it is a fantastic, you know, survival horror game. Now, I know a lot of people love Outlast and a lot of people love Amnesia and all those guys. The guys who have been through the first person survival horror route, right? But somehow, somehow, even in first person, Resident Evil 7 is able to retain being a Resident Evil game, you know, in the best possible ways. The best part, of course, is that, and here's really why it's, you know, my honorable mention, it is also the best virtual reality game out of any platform out there. Fight me.
Ooh,
it really is. You cannot find Resident Evil 7, as of this recording, on any other platform in VR outside, you know, unless you have a PlayStation VR, which, by the way, they had a lot of sales on PlayStation VR over the past several weeks or so, you know, during Black Friday, over to Christmas break. It's a great showcase and a good reason why you should have a PlayStation VR. People can say Star Trek Bridge Crew, psh, no. And a whole bunch of other VR games like Super Hot VR, psh, no. Like, this is the definition of a AAA VR experience, like, that has no compromises whatsoever with, you know, if you remove your VR helmet or what have you. I played this game exclusively in VR, and there is absolutely nothing like this game ever on Oculus or Vive. I almost forgot the other thing's name because that's the lowest selling one. Sorry. But
well, I mean, yeah. I played it without VR, and I could still vouch for it and say it's pretty fucking awesome.
Yeah.
It's just a great game. Like, it's... What really impressed me about it is that you would think, like, it being in first person would be weird, like it wouldn't work, but they managed to make it work, and yet at the same time, it feels more like the first Resident Evil, despite the fact that obviously the first Resident Evil was not first person.
Yes,
and I think the way that they were able to achieve this, and I think this is something that the first Resident Evil doesn't get enough credit for sometimes, and that is through its level design. The Spencer Mansion is an impeccably designed area or level or whatever you want to call it. Like, it's just really intricate and really well designed.
And by design, you mean like the atmospheric design or like the layout of the world or?
All of that.
Okay.
Like, I think it has great atmosphere. And I also think the way that you explore the mansion and the way that you unlock different parts of the mansion with the different keys and whatnot, like, it's very well thought out. And as a player, you're walking through it, you know, you familiarize yourself with it. And you do the same thing with the Baker Estate, which is probably why, you know, I and probably many others feel that when you leave the estate, the game isn't bad or anything, but it's not quite as strong anymore.
Right.
Because that part of the game was so good where you basically like you feel like you know this place and you're exploring it. And when you find like ways to explore parts of it that are new that you haven't been to before, that makes it even more interesting. And it's so well done. I was really impressed with how the Baker Estate was put together.
I'm totally in agreement with you because, like, I think that first part where you are in the Baker Estate, like, that was really the best parts of that game. And in VR, you know, just to kind of give you a little bit of an anecdote and stuff, there's a section where one of the people are chasing you, right? And the real crazy part about VR is the freedom of the camera. So in normal cases, when you're in certain sections of the game, you're probably unable to look at different, you know, camera angles because of the way that the camera is situated based off of a controller, right? But in VR, you can tilt your head and kind of almost extend your body outside of the allowable DualShock, you know, limitation, if you will, so that you can actually see, like, the person hunting you down just kind of walk back and forth in the hallway, you know, connecting to your, you know, to your room, right? And just kind of really feeling that sense of place just with that one tiny change in the way that you can perceive the environment, right? And to me, like, that was really super powerful. And there is a scene, you know, like, in the game, like, this is something that happens all the time in the game, I think. But, like, I had a moment where, like, I think one of my limbs were cut off. And then, like, you know, of course, this isn't VR. The character just basically, like, shoves, like, your limb, like, your cut limb in front of your face. So you see it, and it's, like, splurting all over my face. And yeah. I'm like, oh, my God, I don't even know what's going on. I don't know what to do now. You know, it's like, it's such an exhilarating experience. And again, you don't need VR to play this. But if you do, it is literally the reason why you should play, you know, VR games. It's AAA. It is a game that you can really experience from beginning to end. Yes, you'll have some motion sickness, but, you know, like, you, it's one of the cases where you really should try it, you know, and it's an absolutely fantastic game. If that's not apparent enough, I mean, Daniel and I have gushed on it for the past several minutes. It's yes. really that good. Yeah. So,
yeah, Resident Evil 7 makes me excited for Resident Evil 8.
I hope we get a Resident Evil 8. Capcom's not doing too well financially, though, for some reason.
Oh, snap.
Yeah. Resident Evil 7, fantastic game. You should pick it up. So,
yeah, definitely.
Okay, so do you have another one? I have one other one after this.
No, I really don't have another one.
Yeah, honestly. No. Yeah, it was probably Resident Evil 7.
It was. It was. Yeah.
Okay. So let me think. So the one game that I want to say, you know, that, and I want to mention here is actually, you know, like, it's been kind of a crazy year for games, and it's kind of like, it's really insane to think about all the games that have come out, like Neo, Yakuza 0, Yakuza Kiwami. Like, if we enumerate this, it would be like an impossibility to even narrow down one game that you know, you want mentioned. And, you know, not surprisingly, the game that I'm actually going to be mentioning as, you know, my honorable mention is actually Nier Automata. So, okay. You know, as far as that game goes, like, that was a game that somehow brought people together in the best possible ways. Like, call it what you will, people make fan fictions for the game and people draw characters. We've never seen such fandom for a game, you know, for a very long time. And it's kind of a very unique fandom that talks about, you know, not only, like, you know, existentialism, which you've already talked about, but also various different aspects of, like, you know, game design and kind of question what we value in a game, right? Like, is it the gameplay? Is it the graphics? Is it the message? Is it the story? Is it the things that people talk about in the game that made us think? You know, it's interesting to me that the game was very conscious of what it was trying to achieve. For example, the space station that you're in, the circular design of it is very reminiscent to 2001 A Space Odyssey, right? And if you think about the thematics of that movie, there are things from that movie that touch upon, like, the thematics of Nier Automata in some ways. So it's like this weird kind of very self-conscious way of designing things, again, in a very economical way, but in another way that can reach out and touch people in positive ways. And I mean, you know, the fandom is one of them, but obviously, you know, the design of the character really helps. I mean, I mean, Akihiko Yoshida, my man, you know, you've designed so many great characters, but, you know, this cast of characters is pretty damn freaking fantastic. I'm doing a thumbs up right now. You're not seeing it, but I'm doing a thumbs up right now. 2B is fantastic. It's too bad this is probably going to be the only game she's going to be in, but great job.
Yeah, I mean, like Yoko Taro says, he doesn't like to make the same game twice.
Yeah. Until, of course, you realize that 2B will be a special guest character in Tekken 7, along with Noctis, Geese Howard, and Akuma. I just made that up, obviously, but
I would, that would be pretty cool, though.
It would be pretty cool. But here's something that is even a bigger rumor, and I'll start this rumor. I'm not afraid of starting this rumor. Mark Mann, who actually works closely with Namco Bandai, has always told himself that told everyone that he's a huge Yakuza fan. So if Kazuma Kiryu shows up in Tekken 7, I mean, that's not going to be
that
much
of a pretty sick.
Now, wouldn't it be? I mean, it's pretty damn cool, right? I mean, yeah.
I don't even give a fuck about Tekken 7, but that alone may make me go, maybe I should.
Yeah, maybe you should. I mean, Tekken 7 is a great fighting game anyway, especially if you're not into, you know, fighting. I mean, I don't want to say that because there is a, if you want to be really good, like in the high levels, you obviously have to learn a lot. But, you know, it's you know, if you want to play it with friends, too, I mean, that's a really good game to play with friends and stuff. So I'm not going to proclaim myself as a Tekken expert. I am far from it. But if there was one game, hey, you know what? I'll just throw it out there. Honorable mention, Tekken 7, best fighting game of 2017. Bam! There you go. Right?
Sneaky boy sliding in another honorable.
Yep. It was going to be ARMS, but I think ARMS does a really good job of making fighting games accessible. But the problem is that, and it's not the problem of the game. It's just the problem is that it's really tough to build a community on a new Nintendo IP that's a fighting game, you know? And I think we'll see that game more prominent over the years. It's just, you know, in terms of the breadth of content and the quality of Tekken 7, I mean, that's tough to beat. Tekken 7's tough to beat. So
it's going to be even tougher now that we've got Noctis.
Oh my. Yeah. He's like the third DLC character. I'm like, "Oh, I don't know, man." But yeah, like so that's kind of like, I think that's all like my honorable mentions, really. Like, there's so many games cool that came out in 2017. We can't really sit here and enumerate every single one.
Yeah, I like, just between us talking, I thought about like a couple more games, but I'm like, yeah, you know what? If we the longer this conversation goes on, the more games we'll think about, and then this podcast will be like 4 hours long.
Yeah, we've done that before. Not fun. Especially with me sniffing all over myself with like this unexpected cold that just happened like within the past 2 hours or something, which really sucks. But anyways,
bummer.
We are kind of curious about what your game of the year list is. Again, it's top three. Don't make each a separate category. Okay, I know some of you guys are so indecisive that you guys are going to be like, well, my best JRPG is number three. And I'm like, no, don't do that. We need your top three. Put it on the comments below or, you know, email us podcast@mybacklogbattle.tv or leave us a message on Facebook and Twitter at facebook.com/mybacklogbattle and twitter.com/mybacklogbattle. Also, before we go, I do want to make an announcement as far as the Backlog Battle channel is concerned on YouTube, which is youtube.com/mybacklogbattle. Our video releases have changed. So starting today, we're releasing videos every 10 a.m. Pacific time on Monday, Wednesday, and here's the different day, Friday, now as opposed to Thursday. And the reason why we're moving it, you know, 2 hours back and, you know, one day back is because a lot of games that are on Nintendo release on Friday. And, you know, we don't want to miss that. We don't want to wait until Monday until we release a triplay or something of that. So, again, that's Monday, Wednesday, Friday, 10 a.m. Pacific. That's when we're going to have, like, some new videos coming out. So,
cool beans.
Daniel, it's been a crazy ride being, you know, part of this, like, end of the year, game of the year 2017. Do you have any final words before we go?
2017, one of the best years in gaming.
Yeah.
I don't think anyone's gonna fight me on that.
Nope. It's a tough year to beat.
I mean, we've had some pretty stellar years for gaming. I mean, I think 1998 was pretty notable since I had like Ocarina of Time and Half-Life. You know, that year was like, whoa. But 2017, I think it can be talked about in the same breath. And I don't think anyone would be like too bothered about that.
Right. And for some reason you forgot 2017, just go download the other episode before this, where we basically like kind of sum up the whole of 2017 before this end of the year, game of the year. I think that'll be an eye opener, and where we talk about video games and releases and also news, you know, like EA, you know, that sort of situation. Of course, you know, aside from the YouTube channel, youtube.com/mybacklog.
Baklava
battle. That should be an offshoot. My backlog battle. Go check out Shintai's channel on youtube.com/Shintai Reviews. You guys should check it out. It's a fantastic, very analytical review of games. You know, definitely.
Thank you.
Yeah, you should check it out. So, anyways, guys, thank you very much for joining us for another awesome episode of the Backlog Battle channel and another fantastic end of the year game of the year. And we'll see you guys later. Happy gaming.